This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
The Sims Spotlight is sponsored by Balance of Nature Whole Food Supplements. Visit balanceofnature.com. It is Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network coming to you live for the Built Ford Tough studio every Wednesday, 8 a.m. Phil Sims has been joining us throughout the football season. This is his second to last appearance. I'm starting to get a little bit nostalgic about it. I don't know what we're going to do on Wednesdays when we don't talk to Phil, but we've got him here. So I'll stop wasting time. Phil, good morning. How are you?
Gio, good morning to you. I just don't know what you just said came from the heart.
Oh, it
I don't
did.
Know.
No, it did. I actually do look forward to this. I absolutely do every week, and it's been fun. It's been good. The only thing that has been a disappointment is the fact that you never did come in here, and we never did make it to your house to watch football. But other than that, this has been spectacular for us.
Okay, first and foremost, Boomer saying impediments. Do you know what that really means, Boomer? That's one thing. The other thing is this. I wake up, I think it was Monday morning, whatever, I'm moving around my phone, and I get all these messages, and they go, hey, no exaggeration, Phil, Gio said that you're fat. And I go, really? He said I was fat?
What?
Yeah, that's what
my text message said. I did not say you were fat. No. I did not say you were fat.
I might have said that you were a thick some bitch.
I think I might have shared the story of you had only had one jacket that you could still fit into. I think this. I never said you were fat. But you told that story. I did not say Phil Sims is fat. And then probably Boomer said thick some bitch.
Okay. Well, you know, I tried to gain weight and I did it.
you know how easy it is to gain weight, right?
It's easy to lose it, too, though. That's the easy thing. And, you know, and I enjoy what I do, working out and all that. But, hey, you guys didn't come to my house. Why? Because we did the game. You remember? We did, what, the Philadelphia Giant game? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yes. So that was the weekend you were going to come to my house, but you dumped me, and you wanted to do the game, and Gio wanted to stand on the sidelines. And,
Time out for a second. What? You never invited us back. And by the way, I remember calling you, and your daughter Deirdre was in the background, and I gave her my phone number to reach out to me so we could actually make it out there to your castle.
Oh, don't you see? Quit saying that crap. My castle.
It is a castle.
Oh, come on. Do you want to buy it from me?
Listen, all I can tell you is I saw his bar that he put into his house.
Yeah.
Because he put that bottle that I gave him of the Codigo.
Tequila?
Tequila, yeah. And he put it on the bar. That bar is spectacular.
Well, it's really interesting. I have a bar and we very seldom drink. So that's really
Yeah, but that bar is spectacular.
We got this. We got this great room, and we never go in it, but it really comes in handy for my daughter and all of her friends, and they have parties over here, so that's a different story. But, oh, well, hey, and you know, listen, I will come in after the Super Bowl. I'll come in if you want me to, if it's still the invitation is still there.
So you're talking about a week from today?
Yeah, a week from today. I'll come in the studio.
Hell, we'd love to have you. Yeah,
okay.
Of course. Yeah, look at that.
Okay.
See that picture of the bar? He sent me the picture of the bar.
Yeah.
Because he's very proud of it. See that?
And I could see in the
backyard. I was trying to say to you, you big, thick-headed whatever, I'm watching my language, that I put the bottle you gave me in the best spot to, you know, let everybody want a talking piece. So everybody comes in, sees it.
Yeah.
Boomer Esiason gave me this. This is what we did. So, see, you take it the wrong way, you spin it. And
I'm not spinning in anything. I'm very proud of your bar, too. And we can see the backyard out there where the fox are running.
Yeah, I see two foxes and a giraffe in that picture as well.
One of my foxes has been a little absent lately. I'm a little mad at him, but that's okay.
What if he's dead?
Well, I have thought about that. I hope he's not. But I don't think he is. I mean, come on. He lives on the property. He gets fed every day. He's got the life, man. I don't know what else to say.
Well, I mean, hopefully he's still alive.
I've told you guys, and I do not exaggerate, and I say this. I said to my wife, hey, are we going to have that big chicken tonight? And she goes, no. I go, well, why not? Why are we going to have it? I gave it to the foxes. Oh, good. I'm so glad that they're eating better than me.
Right.
But, you know. Hey, I hear we got a big game coming on here this weekend.
Yes, apparently, yes. Super Bowl 59. And Boomer, I feel like might pick the Eagles by the end of the week. We had your buddy Bill Cowher on yesterday. He picked the Eagles. But as it sits right now, we are the Wednesday before the Super Bowl. I know you've talked up the Philadelphia Eagles for a lot of the year. You love their roster. You think that they don't have a lot of weaknesses. Do you think they take down the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yes, I do. I do. And, I do think they, when you compare the two teams roster wise, I do think the Eagles have the better roster overall. It's really interesting in a lot of ways. And, you know, even the Super Bowl they played 2 years ago, I believe both teams really studied it, which is kind of amazing. I watched it too and saw the Philadelphia Eagles, running their plays. I went, oh my gosh, this is this. They're doing almost the exact same thing now with their offense, with Kellen Moore, a different offensive coordinator, and Jalen Hurts. You know, when you run an offense year after year, the core plays are there. As a quarterback, you know, you're able to read it quicker, get rid of the football, and that's what I've kind of seen from Jalen Hurts, especially in the last game he played. But really interesting how easy it was for him in the passing game against Steve Spagnuolo's defense. You know, they just picked it apart, and the guys weren't open. There were a lot of wide-open guys. So I would expect a different game plan. Even though it was 2 years ago, I would expect a different game plan from the Kansas City Chiefs defense this Sunday.
You know, we were talking about this Super Bowl feels a little flat to us. You know, we're not down there in New Orleans, so we're not feeling the the intensity from the fan bases and everything else. But I for me, and I was telling Gio this morning, and look, you're a Super Bowl MVP, so you know what that means. I think, you know, you're talking about a team, the Kansas City Chiefs, that's on a precipice of doing something that nobody's ever done before, and that's win three straight Super Bowls. And it's amazing how, when I look at their season this year, they scored just enough points to beat whoever they were playing that weekend. And the same thing happened in the playoffs against the Texans and, of course, the Bills. And then when you look at the Eagles, what they did in the playoffs, it wasn't that easy against the Green Bay Packers. It certainly wasn't that easy against the Rams. And then all of a sudden, the turnovers happened to the Commanders, and they blow the Commanders out. So there's a little recency bias, I think, because they scored 55 points. But for me, I don't know about for you. I just want to get your take on this. I mean, I kind of want to see Patrick Mahomes win three in a row. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think there's that part of it, Boomer. I'll be very happy for him. I actually think it's really good for the league. I don't have, you know, I'm looking forward to the game. As every day goes by, I just get more excited about thinking what's going to happen and all this. And, you know, with the Kansas City Chiefs, I think their game plans and managing the game on both sides of the football is going to be really key for this game. And, you know, I look at it and just find a lot of tough matchups. You know, do you want to blitz? If you're the Kansas City Chiefs and Steve Spagnuolo, do you want to blitz and let A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith be one-on-one outside? And one thing about that, if you get aggressive like that, Jalen Hurts is going to throw a moon ball down there on you. And it's one of the, I think, one of the best things he does. He throws it high, leads them into it where, you know, it's hard for the defensive back to adjust to the football because it's so far and so high. He did that in the first Super Bowl, but he's been doing it all year this year. So that'll be interesting to see the game plan on both sides of the ball by the Kansas City Chiefs. I think about that more than I do the other side for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Boomer and Geo with Phil Simms. Jalen Hurts played his best game in a long time in the NFC Championship game, and the best game he ever played outside of that fumble was in the Super Bowl against the Kansas City Chiefs. I know everybody's focused on Saquon, but I feel like the stat line for Jalen Hurts in this game might tell a more of a story of how the Eagles were successful or not. What do you think about his potential performance in this game?
I think you're saying a lot of things that are right. I do. It's I look at the Kansas City secondary and I just go, the matchups against these two wide receivers is a big deal. Then you got Saquon to deal with, and then you got a quarterback that's mobile. And you talk about that fumble for the touchdown. I remember watching that game. We had a group there and I said, oh my gosh, Philadelphia is just crushing. They're dominating the game. And then Jalen Hurts, I'm figuring there's no way that Kansas City's going to win it, and then the fumble. And what happened is, it's Nick Bolton was spying Jalen Hurts. He didn't like his protection. He was going to run the football, saw that, tried to switch the ball in his hands, and he fumbled it. And really, to me, that was probably the biggest play of the game, and it changed the game. And But Jalen Hurts did play well overall, very well. And what they did, Kansas City didn't have many answers to until really they turned it around the second half.
And don't forget, Jalen Hurts had a knee injury in the playoffs here. So there was some, I don't think he played all that great his first two playoff games. But as Gio did point out, you know, against the Washington team, he did play well. Let me just ask you this. You just give me quickly, who has the edge? I'm going to ask you about different parts of the game. All right, so O-line, who has the edge?
Oh, Philadelphia, no question.
D-line.
Best offensive line in the NFL.
I just want to know. I don't need all these explanations that you like to give.
Listen, I'm on the phone.
Weeds.
I don't get to talk much. Just be quiet and let me do what I want. Go ahead.
You just answer the questions the way I'm asking them, all right? Jesus.
Gio.
All right, D-line.
You're going to heaven, Gio.
All right, D-line.
D-line. Philadelphia.
Okay, linebackers.
Philadelphia.
Defensive backs.
Close. You know, I think I'll take Philadelphia there, too.
Okay, running backs.
Philadelphia.
Tight ends.
Kansas City.
Okay, quarterback.
Kansas City.
Coaches.
Kansas City.
Kickers.
Kansas City.
Okay, so really basically, I think what I hear from you and I hear from most people is that Philadelphia predominantly has the better roster. The Chiefs have the better coaching staff and the better quarterback and maybe the better kickers.
Yeah, the coaching staff thing is pretty tough. I do admire what Vic Fangio has constructed down in Philadelphia this year. What he does, it takes a while for it to take effect, and they have times against the pass where they're spectacular. Now, a lot of that just comes from they have a defensive line and that can really rush the passer. Inside, Jalen Carter, once again, will be huge, a big part of this game. It's hard to double-team him. They do a lot of things to make sure he gets one-on-one with the select guy that they picked for that game. That's what I've noticed. And I would think he's going to do all these little things inside and try to go against the left guard for the Kansas City Chiefs. Not that he's the weak spot, but that's the spot I think they would pick to, you know, give Jalen Carter a chance. And speed at linebacker, secondary that covers well. I mean, they got a lot of stuff going on for them there in Philadelphia,
you know,
no doubt.
The interesting thing about the Kansas City Chiefs, 18 straight playoff games where they have not allowed a 100-yard rusher, and it's been 18 straight games. The last 100-yard rusher in the regular season, 2024 now, was Lamar Jackson in week one. So
wow.
You think about a run defense that Saquon Barkley, this has got to be the best run defense he's going to face all year long.
Yeah, it is a good run defense, but how are you going to do it, too? Are you going to crowd up there and commit the secondary a little, the safety, the whatever, to try to stop Saquon Barkley with one of the best offensive lines that I've seen in a long time? and you're going to go one-on-one with these receivers down the field. That's what would scare me. You could stop Saquon, but you better hold your breath. Because like I said, Jalen Hurts is going to throw some long passes down the field to these wide receivers. And, you know, so that's the quandary there that I think they're going to be in. But, you know, that'll be fun to watch just to see the game plans from both of these coaches on both sides. So I'm looking forward to the game. That's all I can say.
What's your favorite Kendrick Lamar song?
I have no idea one song he sings. I you know, I'm sorry.
Well, you're going to learn. You're going to learn a lot. Yeah. Are you a big halftime guy? Do you sit around and you watch the commercials and, you know?
No.
No, you don't.
No, at halftime, I'm griping and moaning about what's going on in the game to whoever's around me. So, you know, that's what we do. I'm not a big halftime guy. I watch it a little bit, but otherwise, I'm talking where let's eat during halftime, that kind of stuff. So I'm going to have quite a crowd here at the house watching the game. And I'm going to be given orders. Shut up.
Do you remember the halftime shows of your Super Bowls? Obviously, the one that you played and then the one that you didn't. But do you remember those halftime performances?
To be honest, no.
Okay.
No.
I don't either.
You don't remember yours either?
I think it was Billy Joel maybe for us, I think. Hmm. I don't know.
Whitney Houston?
I remember Lady Gaga singing the national anthem in Super Bowl 50. Of course, Whitney Houston, I remember. That was awesome. I saw it the other day on TV, and boy, it's tough to watch and not get a little emotional over it. It's really just an unbelievable scene and everything that was going on. But, yeah, it's terrible. I don't remember all these halftime acts. I can't even... Well, wait. Who
Bruno
did it
Mars.
Last year?
How about Bruno Mars? You got to remember Bruno Mars. He did it at MetLife Stadium.
That one I remember. One of my favorites. Yeah,
that guy. He was great. And you know, by the way, Chris Stapleton last year with the national anthem.
Woo! Yeah,
that was great too. Yeah.
Yes, it was. So we were there. So I got a chance to listen to it. But yeah, halftime. I mean, I'll watch for a few seconds or minutes or whatever, and if it catches my eye, I stay with it. But otherwise, especially when you have a lot of people and all that around you, we're going to be talking about the game and. And, you know, as Gio said, I'm getting fat, so I'll have to eat some and have
some. Yeah, well, how about, you know, are you having the whole thing catered? What kind of food you got coming in?
No, I'll do all the cooking, and we'll do it all ourselves. I ain't going to cater.
You sound like a catering guy. You're going to cook on Super Bowl Sunday?
Absolutely. I'll be there doing whatever I got to do. Yes, we'll probably eat before the game, you know, too, Boomer, so we got to eat twice.
Yeah, no, well, you like to eat around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I know that.
And wait, and here's the other thing.
Yes.
What is it about? I heard that I didn't hear. Well, yeah, I heard
here
this.
You hear what? Things that people want you to hear that don't hear it accurately.
Well, people get mad that you say negative things about me, so they text me all this crap. But, you know, a kicking contest. I heard you want to have a kicking contest with me?
See, again, I don't want to have a kicking contest with you. So it's the Manning kickoff for FanDuel this year. And it's
Peyton versus Eli. It's called the Kick of Destiny
3. This is the Kick of Destiny 3, and those two guys are kicking. And somebody called in and said, "Hey, maybe you and Phil could do the Kick of Destiny 4." And I said, "Well, we'd have to do it from the 5-yard line for Phil."
That's just listen. And then what did Gio say? I got a big fat leg and can't get
around. I said you were stiff. Foot. And
I said you were stiff.
And you're stiff. Yes,
that's what I said.
And you are stiff. And you are
Man,
stiff.
Come on, shut your ass up.
You are stiff.
You listen. No, I'm not.
Yes,
hey,
you
listen.
Are.
The other thing is, I was the backup place kicker in high school and college.
So
okay,
I was the place kicker in high school. I was a backup.
Guys, you had no athletes on your team. You had to have somebody try to kick it.
Yeah, I was kicking and punting the whole thing.
Okay, I was the center at first in my high school.
With a nass like yours, that doesn't surprise me.
Shut up. Wait, look, for the punts, because I was the only guy that could throw it back.
Man, I hope FanDuel's listening because this would be perfect.
We are not doing that.
What do you mean we're not doing it? If it's offered to me, you're going to do it. We're going to do it. I would love to do that.
You know, I don't think America needs to see that.
I would say during the off season when, you know, I'm on the field or whatever, I'll end up kicking over the summer probably 100, 200 footballs.
Wow.
Punting and kicking. So
what are you
doing?
That's why
I want to have this competition against you.
You want to do it as a drop kick competition or just, you know, do it off the ground?
Booms. What? It doesn't matter. You're not going to win.
Okay. All right.
You're not going to win.
Okay, stiffness.
Okay.
Johnny Stiffness.
Hey, I expect next week when you come in, I want you to watch all the film of these college quarterbacks in your underwear, and I'm going to really get into it next week.
Yes. Whoa, what do you mean I'm watching them in my underwear?
That's what Boomer tells me that you do. He said you sit in your basement in your underwear and you watch the college quarterbacks.
Oh, wow. I really haven't started that yet. It's
That's why I'm giving you a week. Notice he's not.
Give me a week. What do you think I'm going to do in a week, okay? So I did watch one yesterday, and I went, wow, I like this guy. By the time I got done watching him, I don't like this guy anymore.
Notice he did not deny that he watches them in his underwear.
That's right.
Yeah. So he does.
No.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No.
You did not deny it. You did not deny. Now you're going to deny it because I brought it up, the fact that you did not deny it.
Oh, boy, I tell you. Gio. Like I said, you know, you must have done something wrong in another life. I don't know what else to tell you.
All right, Phil. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you next week. If you actually deliver on your promise, enjoy the game. We will talk to you soon.
All right. I look forward to next week now. This is going to be great. I hope this Super Bowl, whatever, it's going to be fun. So we'll learn the truth about... I'll tell you the truth about Boomer. Don't listen to his story about him. Hell, it's always great when he talks about himself.
All right, Phil.
All right, thanks, Gio.
See you, brother.
Right. Thanks, right, Boom. Bye.
See you, bud.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Station to talk Jets. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app. Download it today.
All right, let's try this again. BT and Sal back on The Fan. We forget the stupid Zoom stuff. We got Thomas Dimitroff on the phone. Thomas, apologize for the technical difficulties there. What happened with the Jets interview? Why didn't you end up getting that job?
No, I'm not really sure exactly why. What I do know is I went in there thinking that they were interviewing for trying to find an experienced general manager and or head coach combination. obviously that's not the direction they went. I thought the interview process went well. Of course, Rick Spielman and Mike Tannenbaum had a lot of work in that, right? I think it was, 20-plus GMs and head coaches being interviewed. There were a lot of people interviewed. And, this is something that – this was the first time I jumped back in after 3 years, put my foot in the water, so to speak, interviewed the Jets as well as Tennessee.
Well, Thomas, was it that you just wanted to get back in the game, or you actually viewed the Jets as an appealing destination? What was appealing to you about the Jets?
Look, I think the Jets was a very appealing situation. I would have not jumped back in on that interview if I didn't believe that. There were too many parallels to, in my mind, to Atlanta when I got back in there in 2008 when we went in. I mean, it was coming off of something that was in a tough situation, coming off the Michael Vick debacle, if you all remember. I'm sure you probably do.
Of course.
And we were way down and out as an organization. I love being the fixer. Like, I love being a rebuilder. That's what I take pride in. And, we were able to resurrect twice in Atlanta, one with Mike Smith when we first came off in 2008. And then when Mike was let go, we brought in Dan Quinn. We got to the Super Bowl. That was something that I take a lot of pride in. And I thought that would be a good fit in New York to come in there and be able to help that group in that way. But, of course, look, I'm really happy for Darren Mugey. He's a good young general manager candidate, and I know him well. He knows football. We actually brought him here as a free agent, brought him to Atlanta as a free agent. So I've known him a long time. He's a really good football guy. And, of course, Aaron Glenn. I mean, I'm really excited about seeing what he can do there.
Yeah. And listen, that's very classy of you to say. We're talking to Thomas Dimitroff, BT and Sal here on The Fan. Sal and I both touted you as a candidate that we were really, really, actually we wanted you to get the job early on in the process. And as you know, and as everybody who follows the NFL knows, that it's never quite as simple with the Jets, whether it's ownership, whether it's the losing history, whether it's a salary cap that's a bit out of whack right now. But there's no way you go into that job, you yourself, Thomas Dimitroff, without a firm opinion on whether or not you were prepared to roll it back with Rodgers next year. Talk about the Rodgers stuff. What was your opinion on Rodgers for 2025, and what was their opinion?
Well, let me tell you this. I mean, you guys know this. I think Aaron Rodgers is one of the best quarterbacks to play in this game. And when I watched the video, and I watched a lot of it, gentlemen, as you can imagine, interviewing for a position like that, This cat can still make plays. He makes balls, throws off camber and off balance, and does some really good things. I think he goes somewhere else, and I think he can be there for another couple years and win in this league. I do believe it's time for him to move away from New York and get a fresh final start.
So do you think that's why you maybe didn't get the job, because you suggested to move on from Rodgers?
No, I don't think that was it at all. I think they were very open to listening to anything that I had to say. I mean, obviously, with my experience, it's not one of those things that I'm just shooting from the hip, and I don't believe so.
BT and Sal, we're talking with Thomas Dimitroff. Who would you have hired? Because you said that the Jets, my main thing was that I wanted the Jets to hire somebody finally, Thomas, with experience, whether it be the head coach or general manager, which is why I wanted you. And I'm very familiar with your work in Atlanta, being a Falcons fan, so I know everything about you and all the things, the positive qualities you bring. And the Jets were maybe looking for that, and then they went away from that. They hired inexperience all over the place. What do you think happened over the course of the interviews?
Yeah, look, I think about that. I mean, look, I was the first interview to jump into the hopper with them probably almost 5 weeks out from when they made their choice. And, we all know how that is. That can be complicated, right? That's human nature. And I think in the end, I mean, let's call it the way it is. I'm sure Mr. Johnson decided that he had a better connection with Darren in this situation, Mugey. And ultimately that's his choice. He can listen to Rick Spielman and Mike Tannenbaum on the advising, because they were part of the search group. And I have a great deal of respect for Jaime Elhai. I think he does a great job there as a president. By the way, there are many presidents out there that people aren't used to working with and maybe don't get along with as much as I think Jaime can do there. So the organization was teed up to be a really good situation for someone to come in there and help them, again, resurrect.
Yeah, but Thomas, I'm confused. I got to go back to something here, because I think it's really one of the most interesting points here. So you said you watched all the film and you watched the tapes in preparation for the interview, and you said that Rodgers could still play. By the way, Sam and I both agree. But then you said that you think he's going to be on a different team and play well for a couple of years. If he still looked good on tape, why would you think he would be on a different team? Was that communicated to you by the Jets?
No, this was my feeling. Look, I am a huge believer in the right energies. I believe that. And not only the right energies, the interaction with the team, the interaction with the staff. I mean, that's a big thing. It just seemed from afar, and what I do know, doing more research on it, that it appeared that this was time for him to get, again, a fresh start and not have to deal with some of what was being twisted around a lot there. So I was more speaking at it from not from necessarily the ability to win a game or a number of games, mm-hmm. but the true energy of an individual in that position. I mean, again, having been around Matt Ryan, we were unbelievably fortunate. By the way, he missed 1.5 games in his 14 years in Atlanta, right? To be around someone like that, that held the locker room in the way he did. I mean, everyone, of course, respects Aaron Rodgers, but there are times when it can get cumbersome in those situations, given personalities. And I thought that it would be the best thing. Again, a fresh start was something that that organization needed, in my mind, at least my perception as I was interviewing.
I know we really appreciate that transparency. Thank you. Do you think that Aaron Rodgers, his presence would complicate Aaron Glenn's first year or make it easier?
No, I think it could go either way, of course. I mean, that's something that of course, Aaron Glenn would have to work through his conversations with Aaron Rodgers, which I'm sure they're probably having, right? I mean, in the end, those two guys, I mean, those guys are both tough, hard-nosed, driven football men. And, you know, maybe Aaron goes to the table and spends time with him. I'm sure he probably does do that. And tries to see if that is truly a match, energy match, interaction, character match that you need. There's no doubt you need a connection between the head coach and the quarterback. And we saw a little bit where, at least it appeared from afar, and I don't know how that was with Robert and how things worked that way. But if that's not gelling, I think it's you're really, I was going to use an analogy I probably can't use, but that's basically a tough situation.
BT, it's Al on the Fan. We're talking with Thomas Dimitroff, of course, former Atlanta Falcons general manager, had a ton of success down there, turning that franchise around, and interviewed for the Jets job. Who would you have hired, Thomas, as a head coach if you did get the job?
Oh, you know what? There were so many guys that I had spoken to. There were a lot of guys that were being considered. You know, just a little bit of inside information. Usually when you're a GM candidate interviewing in today's world, because there is such an important part of making sure there is a mix, the right mix. A lot of the, and I did it, I talked to a lot of the potential head coaches out there, right? So you get on the phone, you spend, three, four conversations with them to really get an idea of who was out there. I had not concluded, and I'd prefer not to necessarily talk about that because I truly had not concluded who that would have been. Aaron, of course, was one of the guys that I was really purely interested in at a lot of levels because of what he'd bring to the table. There are other guys out there, and there are guys that you guys all reported on. I know that. And there are some you liked and others that you weren't. I mean, whether that was Brian Flores, which was another guy I think can get a second chance and kick some ass, quite honestly. And, you know, I know you guys weren't, I mean, I don't know where you guys were on this, but I mean, Matt Nagy will get another chance in this league and win football games in this league as well.
I was going to say, I wanted either experience or offense, and you just mentioned a couple of different things there. Would you have valued experience or offense if you're looking for the next head coach?
I would have valued, honestly, the best leader that they could potentially have gotten there. I'm a big believer. It's not just the offensive side. I mean, I think if you get an adept leader there, an adept D coordinator by trade, and they're going to bring in a really solid, smart, driven, acutely focused offensive coordinator, then you can pull it off. I mean, you can't come in there with a light in the pants guy in New York City and a guy that doesn't lead the team, even though he's a really good offensive mind. It's just not, and personally, it doesn't feel like a fit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you have to be very mindful of that. You guys know that better than anyone. You're around there.
Every day it comes up. Thomas Dimitroff, BT and Sal on the Fan. He's out at New Orleans Super Bowl Radio Row, and he's kind enough to check in, work through those difficulties, which is great. You know, one of the it's because Rodgers is such a big shadow, and Woody Johnson, the story in The Athletic about a month or so ago with some of the situations behind the scenes. I got to tell you, Thomas, one of the things that I don't know that everybody's really calculating on, some of these contract decisions the Jets have to make on, whether it's Sauce Gardner, whether it's Garrett Wilson, we're talking $100 million. We're talking maybe Gardner, the highest paid corner. We're talking, you know, Wilson being paid like Jamar Chase and Jefferson. Was that broached and with Woody? And if not, I would be surprised. Like, why not? How much did that stuff come up?
No, those are the kind of things that definitely will come up in the interviews. And anytime you're interviewing for a GM job, you're going to be able to talk through the entire roster and you're going to give your opinions. Unfortunately for us, there were levels of interviews, right? So we in a first 3 year, excuse me, 3 hour interview, you're not getting to all that. That normally the depth of some of that ends up really taking place in that second interview session. Mm-hmm. And I was not fortunate enough to get to that spot.
You know, Thomas, prior to your arrival in Atlanta, and you know this, but just so our audience, and I know this because I'm a fan, but just to educate the audience a little bit, the Atlanta Falcons have never had back-to-back winning seasons. And as you said before, you took over under the most incredibly trying circumstances where the quarterback, the face of the franchise, was thrown into prison, the head coach quit on the team, and you built that thing up immediately, hiring Mike Smith, a no-name head coach, defensive coordinator, drafting Matt Ryan, and obviously the rest is history. But you said something interesting there before that made me think. If you are doing this in New York, because as you know, both the Jets and Giants, we've got two teams here, none of them are worth anything. They've been awful for the last decade plus, and I've been wondering why a guy like you or Mike Smith couldn't come here and maybe turn these franchises around. If you were making hires as a GM for New York, for the Giants or the Jets, would you hire a guy like Mike Smith? Or because of his personality and demeanor, maybe you would think you have to go somewhere else because of the market in New York?
No, I think you have to look at all. I think you have to be very thoughtful in the approach. And you do have to look at the market. I mean, Mike Smith coming into Atlanta, again, what he was he was one of the best defensive minds out there at the time. And he didn't have experience as I did. We were neophytes. So I do believe the neophyte first year thing can totally happen with the right football people, with the right football mind, and the right drive and desire to lead men. And, you know, I think that's a big, big deal. And I think back to the Jets, I mean, they are coming to the table with that with Aaron Glenn, right? It's just, you know, again, I do believe that there is value in the league. And you can talk on and on about this and ask me questions of why you don't think that GMs are getting second chances. The reality is, there needs to be more of that. Not just me speaking. Even when I decide to finally walk away from this league 100%, I think it's great for the league to have a mix of young guys and experienced guys. And I think I think the league knows that. I believe the commissioner knows that. And I just think that's the direction it should always go.
I want to ask you something about the quarterbacks here. And this is more for the Giants than the Jets. But who knows? Maybe the Jets did do something wacky at 7 as well. If you're a general manager and you don't have one of the first two picks, okay, so you don't have direct access to Ward or Sanders, and you're, say, 3 through 9, do you like these quarterbacks enough to scoot up and make an aggressive draft day trade and try to get one of them? How do you view these quarterbacks?
I think the quarterbacks are talented. I think Cam Ward has a lot of talent. I think Shedeur Sanders does. They have their own styles, of course, and elements that are positives, and then they have other parts that they're going to have to be working on and developing. That said, this is not the same quarterback class as last year. I'm sure most would agree with that. I still do believe that if you're sitting at the top two picks, that takes a lot to jump up there and would be ideal. I'm sitting there thinking about Tennessee at number one, and when I interviewed for that job, I thought, what a great opportunity that would be to be able to finally trade back. And you guys know that. I mean, I was Trader Thomas. I was always about moving up. I didn't move back that often.
Yep.
But this was one of those situations I daydreamed about moving back into 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, getting a legit offensive lineman off for that Tennessee team to work off that right side, continue to build for that team, that I think that it would be great. But you're like you just said and alluded to, you need a partner in that. And I don't know how many teams are going to be moving up to 1 or 2. That's big booty, as you know, trade booty. It would be great to be able to do that. It was funny. I'm walking around here, and there's more and more gathering steam on the Cam Ward thing. So I'll be interested to see if how that plays out. Of course, you know, Shedeur Sanders, because aren't they talking about Shedeur ending up in New York?
That's the buzz.
There at the Giants?
Yeah, it's the buzz. The buzz, Tom.
Well, it'll be interesting again. There is no, at this point, respectfully to that group, there's no Jaden Daniels in this group right now, in my mind. Obviously, Mike or Dan Quinn hit on that one. That's a good situation for he and Adam Peters up in Washington.
Well, since you brought up Dan Quinn, Thomas, I have to mention this. As a Falcon fan, I was heartbroken when you moved on from Mike Smith. I didn't like the hire of Dan Quinn. He did get to a Super Bowl. I flew down there for the playoff games, the championship game. I didn't go to the Super Bowl, thankfully. Are you over? I'm not. Are you over 28-3 yet?
I am always, yes, I'm over it, but wow. I swear meaning I'm not, I don't have like the you know, gut wrenching feeling. What I do do is periodically, and I still have a really good relationship with Arthur Blank, we will periodically text each other, re that loss, interestingly enough, as it pertains to other losses and other things that are parallel. It's interesting. It'll forever be there. And one thing I will say, and I mentioned it a little bit earlier, my drive to come back is not about the money. It's not about anything that my drive to have come back and interview. It's to resurrect. It's to build. And it's to win a Super Bowl next time, because I did not get an opportunity to win at the helm as a general manager.
It breaks my heart, Thomas, all kidding aside, because you deserve better. The owner deserved better. Mike Smith, I know Dan Quinn ended up blowing the Super Bowl, but Mike Smith deserved better, and certainly Matt Ryan deserved better than to have that loss hung on him. And as a Falcon fan, I just feel like, what the hell did I deserve? I mean, the Falcons, come on, get out the worst loss in the history of the sport hung on us. But anyway, you did a great job with them. I hope, I was rooting for you to get the Jets job. I hope you get back on the horse here at some point soon, Thomas. Thanks for your time.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for the comments, guys. Yeah. Look forward to good next stuff. Time. Thank you.
There you go, Thomas Dimitroff. Glad we were able to work that out, BT. He was fantastic
was
and
good.
Transparent right there. And I would bet, now he didn't say it, but I would bet that a lot of his transparency and blunt honesty turned off the Jets.
With Rodgers.
And I think it's a mistake. I'll leave it
we'll
at that.
We'll see.
You get that sense, like, too? Are you getting that sense, too? I mean, he basically said it flat out. Like, here's what you need to do.
Yeah.
I'd move on from Rodgers. I'm an energy guy.
Like, well, that's why I went back to the question. I know. Because he's like, yeah, I watched all the snaps and he can still play. And then the next sentence, he's like, well, I see him playing for a different team. I'm like, well, if the snaps were good, why the hell are you bouncing him?
Yeah
he's... Remember, when we first heard that name, you obviously know him. He was your guy. I was very into Thomas Dimitroff. That is somebody that I would have hired. Is Muji going to be better? I have no idea, but I've always liked Dimitroff.
It would have certainly been different.
I like him.
I mean, better, who knows, but it would have been different.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Joining us right now from the NFL Today on CBS is Super Bowl champion head coach, Hall of Famer, Bill Cowher. Coach, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Gio. You and Boom, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great, Coach. Always great to talk to you. And I'm sure you had a great time this year without me and Phil pestering you. The one thing I just want to say, I just got to tell Matt Ryan, look, man, you got to test Coach a little bit more and stop being so damn respectful.
But, you know what? It was less confrontation this year. You know, it was a little smoother, I must admit. But you and I, and Phil, we have to be confrontational. It's kind of a little bit who we are. It's in our DNA.
It is in our DNA for 100% sure. I got to tell you, I miss you. I miss all the crew, miss Drew and everybody else. I just didn't miss the commitment. You know how, like, you were telling me, like, you know, Boom, why would I want to go back and take on that coaching commitment?
Yeah.
You know, right. because it's just a beast. And when you have a job like I have here every single day, and then actually you have to show up for 12 hours on Sunday and deal with you and deal with
well,
me.
Plus, you also have to deal with Gio, too.
Yeah, I got to deal with Gio, too. It makes my life. Yeah. It's just
my fault. I'm sorry.
It sucks. Anyway, let me ask you this. As we get ready for the Super Bowl, I did want to ask you about Andy Reid and his ability just to be on point, coaching, being the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. It doesn't seem like anything really bothers him. The last time we saw him lose the Super Bowl was to Tampa Bay, and that was, of course, when his son had the issue prior to them arriving to the Super Bowl down in Tampa that we did. What makes him such a great head coach?
Well, you know, Boom, it's funny because when Andy came into the league, matter of fact, I came in 92, and he was with Mike Holmgren up in Green Bay, and I was in Pittsburgh, and he went from there to Philadelphia. I got to know him very well because we both were losing championship games, and the loser of the championship games ends up coaching the Pro Bowl. So we kind of went down that path a few years. And, you know, I think the biggest thing about Andy is that he's a great offensive mind, but more importantly that, he's got a great connection to players. He's a teacher at heart. And I think he's always been able to also surround himself with very, very good teachers and coaches as well. Like him and Spag go back over 30 years together. And I think that combination of him and Steve Spagnuolo, he turns a lot over to him, gives him the latitude to do whatever he wants. There's a trust that's involved there. And I think the team kind of feels that connection on both sides of the ball. So his ability to collaborate with a lot of people, he's got a great offensive mind. He delegates very well. He's got a great pulse for his team.
You know, it's hard for me to pick against the Chiefs because they don't lose anymore. And watching them find ways to win in the regular season and the postseason, I feel the same way about this game. Even though the Eagles had a tremendous NFC Championship game, a great year, they got a great defense and Saquon and everything else, I just feel like, once again, this team for the third straight year in a Super Bowl will find a way to win. Do you feel the same way, or do you like Philadelphia a little bit more in this game?
Well, you know, Gio, the one thing I always go back to, I think when you look at the Philadelphia Eagles, this team was built from the inside out. And then we talk about A.J. Brown, we talk about Saquon. But this offensive line and defensive line, to me, combination of the two, are as strong as there is in the National Football League. And I think through the course of time, that does become a determining factor. This is the best offensive line. This is not the same team that you saw 2 years ago, that being the Philadelphia Eagles. Jalen Hurts is playing well. And I look on the other side of the ball, you look at those two guys inside. You're talking about Milton Williams and Jalen Carter. They're strong. You know, and I think we look at the offensive line of the Kansas City Chiefs. It's not as strong as it was 2 years ago. You know, they had to move Joe Tooney out there in late in the year to kind of solidify the protection, and even the run game is not what it once was. So I think this game's going to be a lot closer than you think, and I think, as a matter of fact, if I had to side with one team, I would have to look at the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, especially with those defensive tackles, because as a quarterback, we hate pressure up the middle. We can deal with pressure around the end, but the pressure up the middle and the athleticism of one Jalen Carter, as you pointed out, it's just amazing. He's had a great playoff. Now, you know, has there ever been, can you think of a team, coach, that has ever had the offseason that the Philadelphia Eagles have had last offseason? You know, they were thinking about firing Nick Sirianni. They bring in two different coordinators, Kellen Moore and, of course, Vic Fangio. They've signed Saquon Barkley. They draft the two rookies in the secondary. We just talked about their defensive line. They added Mekhi Becton to their offensive line. I mean, Howie Roseman pretty much hit on almost everything that he decided to do last year.
He really did, but I think that's a great point, because I think when you look at what Howie did, and I think, you know, I just remember the year 2000, and we were in Pittsburgh. I released both the coordinators at the end of the year and brought two new guys in. And ironically, 2001, we went 13-3 with two new coordinators. There's something about a new voice. There's something about sometimes if you bring in guys who've been there and have done that. And I think what he's hit a home run with both these guys. And I think, again, you know, what Kellen's done, probably going to end up being a coach of the New Orleans Saints. He's connected with Jalen Hurts, but I think what Vic Fangio has done with that secondary is remarkable. And Vic comes back, go all the way back to New Orleans. When I hired Dom Capers, he was a defensive back coach for Steve Sidwell back in 1991. Vic Fangio was coaching linebackers. So Vic Fangio has been around in the NFL for a long, long time. And he has a way of taking the best, and they'll play a lot of zone. They're very good tacklers. I think, you know, look what the year Zach Bonds had, and they get, you're talking about these inside guys, Nolan Smith and Josh Sweat coming off the corner is pretty good too. So this is a really, really good defense. They don't get up a lot of big plays. It'll be very important for, I think, Patrick to use his legs, which he's done in the postseason a lot, but to be patient enough just to take what they give him.
Boomer and Geo with Bill Cowher on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. I want to talk about the Jets and Giants a little bit. Of course, the Jets with another regime change. They have a first-time general manager, a first-time head coach. What do you think of the hires of Darren Mooji as the GM from Denver and, of course, Aaron Glenn being the new Jets head coach?
Well, I mean, I think they're aligned together. I think that's one thing, Geo. I love Aaron Glenn coming in. I know he's bringing in his OG. It comes from Detroit as well. So I think that's important, and they have a kind of a feel. Yeah, I always thought when I became the head coach for the first time, the most significant hire I had was on the other side of the ball, on the offensive side of the ball. So someone who can think the way I think philosophically to be able to, someone I can trust and I can grow with. I know my first hire was Ron Earhart, who came from New York Giants. We wanted to run the football, kind of establish that degree of physicality that we wanted to play with and kind of an identity. And, you know, so we that was a good marriage, and I think he's going to do the same. But what they got to do is figure out and talk to Aaron Rodgers and see if Aaron's willing to understand and work with this new offensive coordinator, Tanner, who's coming in, and, you know, see if there's a degree of compromise that they can meet and mesh and add some kind of style of play that they both can feel comfortable with. And because I think that's the first thing that Aaron's going to want to do is figure out the situation with Aaron Rodgers and certainly that quarterback room.
Would you want Aaron Rodgers back if you're Aaron Glenn? Meaning, you know, look, you're a rookie head coach. It's your team. We all have watched Aaron Rodgers here the last 2 years. He certainly, at times, has taken the wind out of the room, and I would say was a lot to deal with. And he is a very big personality. He's got opinions. He's not afraid to give them out, especially on ESPN and the McAfee show. I'm just wondering, if you're Aaron Glenn, do you want that type of personality here when you get here to try to take over the organization?
Well, the first thing I'd say, Boom, was what are my options, okay? And if I got – who else do I have in that room? And I need to sit down and have those conversations with Aaron Rodgers. There's got to be, like I said, there's got to be a degree of compromise in terms of what we really want to set precedent-wise, what that culture needs to be. I know inside that locker room, he's looked upon as a very good leader. He's a worker. He understands what it takes to win a championship. I know his age is one thing, but if you think about the fact he didn't play his first 3 years, he didn't play 2 years ago. I think he can still spin the ball very well. I think his mobility is fine. I think they want to get back to running the football, which I think would fit their style, which will help their defense. So again, I think those are the conversations you want to have with them. We don't need to give the state of our locker room on a daily basis, but, you know, again, you're never going to stop someone from being them, and I never would want to do that. I mean, listen, you want people to be themselves, but also recognize that what you have inside that building is a certain culture, a trust that you have, and something you're trying to build. And I think he wants to be a part of that. I think he gives a lot to the table. He brings a lot to that locker room. And again, maybe as a bridge to whoever that young quarterback coming in, I think that's where he is in his career. I think he understands that. But again, there's have to be an understanding that he and Aaron have on a regular basis, and covering all those platforms I talked about in terms of coming to a compromise with style of play, talking about what his leadership's going to be, not from the outward, but also from the inward. So a lot of those things, I think you have to sit down and just see if they can come to a compromise and come to a sense of agreement.
I know you've been an advocate of keeping head coaches around and stability and not moving on so quickly, and the Giants are keeping Brian Daboll and Joe Shane for at least another year, and John Mara made it clear that he needs to see some major, major changes to keep them beyond that. When you look at the Giants organization right now, how do those two turn it around and keep their job past next year?
Well, I think it's the same thing, Gio. I think that you're right, and I think at some point you have to make sure that you're showing signs. There's a vision of moving forward, and I think that's the one thing that, again, as you look at it, was just a step back. Sure was. You sit there, you lose your star running back, then all of a sudden you get rid of your quarterback. Where's the vision moving forward? So I think that's going to be the biggest thing, and I think seeing some degree of progress moving forward this year and what that vision may be. Again, I'm not sure what the scenario is in that room as they sit down, Joe and Brian Daboll and John Mara. They all have to kind of agree what they want to see this team be 2 to 3 years ago down the line. And so I think that's the most important thing in the National Football League. It's not where you are. It's the direction that you're heading. And not that you're not flexible enough to be able to deviate somewhere along the way when something comes along. But I think they need to build this team right now from the offensive and defensive lines. And I think that's, to me, you've seen too many good players have left this football team and they've been everywhere else. Xavier McKinney, Love in Seattle. So, I mean, there's a lot of guys. And certainly Big Cat Williams had the year he had, so, and certainly Saquon. But, I mean, I think, again, you're getting players in, but now you're letting players go. What is the vision? How do you want to build this team? And you need to make show signs that you have a step in that direction this year.
Yeah, well, hopefully. I mean, you know, John Mara said last year he expected a much better season, especially with their 100th season anniversary that they were celebrating, and that really wasn't the case. Hey, what did you think about Coach Carroll, and he hires Chip Kelly, and they're going to be running the Raiders, man. I mean, you're younger than Coach Carroll. What are you thinking about? You know how much money these guys are making?
Hey, boom, I'm not younger than him. Younger than Bill Belichick. He went back to college. and listen, I'm only 1 year older than Andy Reid. So like, we're all in that same frame. So, you know, my whole point is old school still works, okay? So don't sit there and talk about the newfound football. Old school still works. As long as you have the energy and you have the people around you. And Pete will be great. So, I mean, again, that, you know, I think like a lot of these teams, like right now, you got to find out what that quarterback room is like. But even if you don't have that guy, build it up around it so that you can build this thing. And I go back to the same thing, offensive and defensive lines. Build those things up so that when you do get a guy that comes along, you can insert them and not sit there and all of a sudden build around him. Insert that quarterback, kind of like we did with Ben. I mean, we went through a lot of years, and Gio, you know, being back in Pittsburgh. I mean, we had Tommy Maddox, we had, you know, Cordell, good quarterbacks, but we kept building the thing around him. And all of a sudden, Ben comes along, and he's kind of a generational quarterback, and all of a sudden, boom, you insert him, and boom, here you are in the Super Bowl. So I think you can still win in this league without a great quarterback, which I think the biggest thing is finding that identity and that personality that you want that team to be. So that when you get that generational guy or you get that special quarterback comes along, it's there for him to kind of take it and run with it. So I think, again, for Pete, it's going to be, again, doing the same thing. I've been keeping Max Crosby, keeping him happy on the defensive side, build that defense first, get the running game going, and let Chip put his system in place and maybe find a quarterback in this draft or somewhere in free agency that he'll mess with.
You know, I always think about when you guys got Ben, he fell to you in that draft, like number 9, I think, overall was the pick, right?
I was number 12, yeah.
Number 12, all right, number 12. I think about like Josh Allen falling to the Buffalo Bills and how it just changes the dynamic of the franchise to the point that, you know, I wouldn't say that Jaden Daniels fell to the Washington Commanders. He was the number 2 overall pick. So, and there was a consensus number 1 with Caleb Williams. What do you think about the Chicago hire and what do you think that's going to do for him with Ben Johnson?
I think it'll do great for Caleb. I honestly do. I think, again, I think Ben is an offensive mind. I think, again, they got to build this thing up front, get back to running the football. I think that's one thing you see it around the league this year. Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels, they've been able, they're athletic, number one. They can use their legs, but they also leaned on a running game a lot to be their identity on the offensive side of the ball. And that really does, again, I go back to the same thing, running the football. It also helps your defense because all of a sudden there's a degree of physicality that becomes with that. There's also not as many snaps because you shorten the game. And I think that's the way you groom young quarterbacks. I think Ben was groomed that way. He probably didn't throw 30 passes to about his 7th or 8th game he was in the league. His first 6-7 games, he was running the football, playing defense, and, you know, I just didn't want him to lose a game until he could learn how to win a game. And I think that was the biggest thing to me, as I said to him, just don't lose a game. Someday we're going to need you to win a game, but just don't lose the game. And so I think that's the biggest thing for young quarterbacks, to understand that part of it. That's not being risk averse. I mean, you're still doing things, but there's a process that you go through of making good decisions. I think we saw that with Josh Allen this year, making those good decisions. They redid that whole wide receiver room, and he took ownership over that. And ownership sometimes is making those good decisions in a football game that gives your team a chance to win.
Talking to Bill Cowher, you had some legendary battles with officials over the years, some real memorable ones, putting the photo in the pocket of the official, which was still makes me laugh to this day. And we hear a lot about NFL fans believing that the Kansas City Chiefs are getting more calls than their opponents. And if you do look at some of the numbers, they do get more calls than their opponents. Did you ever feel when you were coaching that one of your opposing teams that you were playing was getting favorable calls?
Well, if I did that, Joe, I never really had battles with him. We just didn't see the game the same way. Sometimes I'd walk up behind the guy and just say, excuse me, are we watching the same game? Because I'm not sure I'm seeing the same game. And, you know, the fact that there is six fouls on us and zero on them, I just also want to say I'm not that bad a coach, okay? This guy's not that better coach than me because I got penalties. He's doing the same thing we're doing. I'm just asking for you to be consistent with that. And listen, I just want to go, there's a game going on in this field. You might want to just check it out. It's pretty good.
He was a wise ass is what he was. And I don't blame you, Coach, because it can be kind of frustrating. I just want to go back to the Super Bowl real quickly. Steve Spagnuolo, I mean, this defense has been amazing. You know, in 18 playoff games, I've been reading, like, they haven't given up a 100-yard rusher in 18 playoff games. And then also, if you take this season, they've only given up one 100-yard or more, 100 or more yard rusher, and that was in week one, and that was Lamar. So maybe Jalen on the ground is going to be a big, significant part of what they're going to have to do to be a success offensively against this Chiefs defense. What is it about Steve Spagnuolo and his scheme that makes it so difficult to run against?
Well, you know, I love Spag because you know what, Boom. Like I used to always, and I've talked to Spag before, but it's like he will blitz you. You get down to third and five or more, you don't know what you want to get. And I think that's the biggest thing he'll do. He'll give you some eight-man fronts early to get you into those third down and longs. But there's always a different blitz. I mean, Trent McDuffie is one of the best blitzers they've had. Justin Reed, the same thing. He will give you different looks, and then he drops people out. I mean, there's times you'll see Chris Jones dropping into those shallow areas across the field. So he doesn't make the areas that he voids very, very clear to the quarterback. And he gives you a lot of different looks. He'll overload one side. He brings four from one side. So I think Jalen Hurts and his legs will be a big part of it. I think throwing on first down, if you want to throw against this football team, you want to throw on first down. You don't want to get into third longs against this football team because that's when he is at his best in terms of showing you different looks, creating the pressures that can create the turnovers. So, but again, I'll go back. This offensive line of the Philadelphia Eagles and what they have on the outside with AJ Brown and Devontae Smith and Goddard. And one thing I'll say about Saquon, to me, with Saquon, it's not about the yards, it's about the attempts. You know, I think you got to continue to give him that because Saquon can go 2, 2, 3, 30. And so he's at one of those guys, if he's a big play guy, kind of like Derrick Henry is, they will get stronger as the game goes on. So you cannot abandon the run. But at the same time, you want to make sure that you give your quarterback a chance on first down, but stay out of the third and longs.
Coach, it's great talking to you. You like the Eagles in the game. It makes me rethink my pick a little bit, but great to hear your voice, and hopefully we'll see you around soon.
All right, Gio. Good to see you. Talking to you, Boom.
All right, Coach. Take care, man. Have a good Super Bowl. Enjoy.
Thank you, man.
All right, bye.
Thanks.
The great Bill Cowher, Super Bowl 40 champion.
I watched your show, and I just thought that, you know, Matt Ryan took it easy on him.
Well, yeah, clearly. I mean, he's the new guy. He wants to come in. He wants to fit in. He doesn't want to bust the chops of the elders.
Oh, he's very bright and very smart. Knows all the things you got to do. But, you know, you got to challenge the coach a little more.
Well, I mean, maybe next year. You know, maybe next year he decides to fight back a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
Coach was like in the middle of a ping pong game with me and Phil.
Yeah.
You know, Phil would yell
you
at him.
Do shut up.
Then I would yell at him. Then he would yell at him. Then I would yell at him some more.
Yep,
he just got he got over. This year was a cakewalk for him,
like the Yankees to the World Series.
Yes.
Right now, we are joined by SNY's Ian Begley. Ian, of course, covers basketball with the Knicks, the Nets for SNY, and is their insider. Also, the show, The Putback, you can catch that out as well. The digital show for SNY.TV. Ian, before we get into the trades stuff, where are we at with OG's health here? Do you expect this to be a long-term thing for the Knicks? Where are we at with OG?
I don't think he's going to play before the All-Star break. I'd be surprised if he did. But to me, they dodged a bullet when that MRI came back and the diagnosis was the same, which was a mild foot sprain. Now, that area of the foot's tricky. I think you're going to let him rest as long as you can. But the idea that it wasn't a lisfranc, it wasn't an Achilles, it wasn't something more complicated, I really think they dodged a bullet there.
There's no doubt. When I saw that live, I'm like, that's it. That's the Achilles. I thought it was going to roll up like a lampshade. It was just scary. I mean, LeBron was holding him up. So all things considered, the absolute best news for OG, I agree, but still disconcerting the way he got hurt. Like, generally healthy people in their prime just don't get hurt like that.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, his career, he's had injuries throughout his career. Staying healthy has been an issue. And so, you know, Knicks make a big investment in a player who's incredibly talented, who delivers on both ends of the floor when he's healthy. But, yeah, certainly these things pop up in February. It's something you're going to have to worry about, you know, through April, May, and however late you're playing into the spring.
Okay, so that is potentially awful news, certainly good, better news, but not amazing news. But let's get to some news that is also encouraging, but we'll see if it winds up being amazing if he stays healthy. Mitchell Robinson has gotten healthy. I mean, this is a roll of the dice, man. I know he's cleared and he's ready to roll, start practicing, which means playing is right around the corner, but you don't know how the body's going to respond. He, like OG, is brittle and always banged up. So, you know, preemptively, do you make a trade just in case Mitchell Robinson gets hurt?
Yeah, and so the latest that I had heard there was, at least in terms of Mitchell Robinson, Knicks had not been talking to teams about him, as far as what I could gather yesterday. Now, as far as bringing somebody else in, they'll move Jericho Sims out. I don't think they'll bring a player back in there for Sims. It'll probably be draft picks of some kind. And then you're looking at, you know, a Valanciunas, an Alex Len. There are guys out there who you could bring in to kind of bridge the gap, but you're going to spend assets to bring these guys in for, what, a month or two while Mitch kind of gets his sea legs back? I would assume, because they seem to be settled on Mitch, that they don't go out and spend assets on one of these veteran bigs out there.
BT and Sal and the Fan, we're talking about SNY's insider Ian Begley. What about Durant? There was a report or some speculation that the Knicks might be interested in Durant. Is there any truth to that, as far as you know, Ian?
I mean, what team is not interested in Durant, first of all?
Yeah, I don't want him. There's nothing there.
Think, you know, any big move for the Knicks would not happen in season. And so, yeah, Durant, I mean, Golden State's right there, right? They've been turned down a few times by Phoenix in this trade period here, but I don't see the Knicks in there at all. And so I think you're across both local teams off the list for that one.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised. I just wanted to get your expertise because I trust you more so than anybody else, which is why we appreciate you taking the time to join us today. I mean, a trade of that magnitude doesn't seem realistic for the Knicks at this particular point, nor do I think it was a good fit. So just back to Mitchell Robinson, assuming that the Knicks do keep him, what's next? Like, what are they looking for here? They're going to move on from Jericho Sims, fine. What can the Knicks add to fortify this roster as being a legitimate championship contender?
The one thing you're looking at is you're looking at getting a veteran in that 15th spot, because they'll have some money, some wiggle room between where they are now salary-wise and the second apron. I don't want to put people to sleep, but essentially they can't go above certain salary mark, and they'll have enough room to bring in a veteran the end of the roster. I would think TJ Warren has an edge there now, so maybe that's a guy you bring in, a wing who has been playing well in the G League, veteran. But as far as like a big name, significant addition, I can't see it. They had an interest in Gershon Gabuselli out in Philly, but seems to me that Philly would have a high price for Gabuselli, number one. Number two, it seems like they're setting themselves up financially to be able to keep him around. So I don't see that move happening. So right now, it just seems like it might be a quiet Thursday afternoon for New York.
Let me ask you this. Me and Sal were kicking it around briefly. So listen, Doncic is obviously where he is, and AD is where he is. Let's say, and I don't understand why they didn't call the entire league and try to get a whole lot more than they got. I mean, there's obviously stuff going on behind the scenes. Clearly, they just had to get rid of him. But let's say Dallas would have called the Knicks. And let's say Ian Begley, instead of being a star on SNY, he's running the Knicks. And they said, all right, let's go. We want to bring back Brunson to Dallas straight up for Doncic. Would you have done that from a Knicks perspective? Just curious.
Straight up.
Yep.
Because you are changing everything.
I know.
You're talking about Jalen Brunson because he started the thing. Straight up?
Yeah.
I might. That's tough, man.
Well, I said it's not that tough for me. I said no. It's not that tough for us.
Yeah, right. I think I would probably lean that way only because you're losing everything you've built if he goes out. He's the foundation. He started this thing swinging in the right direction. It would just, I think you'd ruin the locker room. But I will say this, if I was running the Knicks, I would give monthly press conferences to the reporters.
That is true, man. They don't say anything.
What do you think they need? We're talking with Ian Bagley of SNY. Of course, the insider there. Check out the Putback, the show for SNY.TV, the digital show they do a great job with. What do you think is lacking, Ian, from this Knicks team?
I think a big wing off the bench. Look, Miles McBride has been fantastic by and large last year. This year, he's making shots. So it's not a knock against Miles, but it's more so just the personnel in this league and what you're matching up with, even in team second units. I think you could use a bigger wing in that bench unit to solidify things. You know, Landry Shamet, he's gotten minutes here and there, hasn't shot it well of late. So I don't know if he's the guy, but they need somebody like that. Someone like that that can give you something on both ends of the floor that has a little bit of size.
Yeah. You know, I don't think there's too many answers, but I want to know what your answer is. Because anything you talk about, like what the Knicks might do, incorporated with what they've already done. In your opinion, like, how long is this championship window in years? What do you think for this group?
I like, you know, Bridges, they're going to extend them, I would assume. And so you have OG several years. I'm looking at, you know, three seasons solid.
Like yep.
This one and two more solidly.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, who knows where things go. If things go sideways, obviously you blow everything up. But I do think three solid seasons. You know, the interesting thing to me is, like, you know, this league, there's always going to be a Kevin Durant, you know, floating around available. There's always going to be a top De'Aaron Fox. And so do the Knicks get to a point there where they're sitting there in an offseason where they didn't go where they wanted to go and say, hey, let's be aggressive here and go after player X? That's the one thing that I'm not sure of, but I do think everything stays the same. I think two solid seasons after this one.
It's funny. My number is three as well, including this one. So this and then two more. So the roster aside, you know, when that next star, superstar in between becomes available, yeah, I mean, maybe the Knicks are interested on some level, depending upon where they go. But I think, and I'm a fan, I'm not trying to turn this dirty here, Tom Thibodeau's got to win, man. Like, if Tom Thibodeau doesn't advance this team past where, and then we all think it's got to get past, he's not going to be coaching this team forever.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the first person to take the fall, right? When you don't meet expectations, he's signed an extension. I believe he's under contract for the next two seasons at least. And so, the one thing I would say there, and look, things change all the time, but I'll go back to this when Leon Rose, he's gotten the green light to do whatever he wanted from ownership in terms of making a coaching change, hasn't done it, has stuck with Thibodeau. And I was told that when it got really hairy, early 2 years ago, he wasn't going to fire Tibbs and maybe he was going to go down with the ship. So I only say that to say there's a loyalty there.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist in every franchise and every front office. So I do think that factors in when you're talking about Tibbs' job, but certainly somebody would take the hit if they fail to live up to expectations. Maybe not this year, but I think next year, mm-hmm. people might start to get antsy.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you that question. In fact, if the Knicks don't get over the hump in the next couple of years, would they be looking to make a change there before breaking this thing up? I mean, look, Ian, I mean, if all the pieces are in place, like getting Mitchell Robinson back, and the Knicks are going to maybe make some smaller additions here, this is it. I mean, this is the team. Do you think that it's good enough, led by Brunson, with the other scoring options that we have, assuming health, like assuming OG comes back healthy and Mitch, do you think that they can win an NBA title?
Currently constituted, I don't think so. But I also, just being honest in terms of where everything is, just because they may not make a move at the deadline by Thursday, I don't think this is the complete, full, final roster. And so I don't want to, like, suggest anything, but I do think that they're – was an appetite internally to make some more significant moves. Obviously, there wasn't a consensus there, but I said that to say this, I don't think, is the end-all, be-all when we're talking about the next two seasons after this one. I think there could be some moving parts if needed.
Well, who would be the one to go?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to get, don't need the insight.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if you do the math, it's not going to be Brunson. They just got Towns here. They traded a boatload for Bridges.
What are the wings?
They signed OG. I mean, we look at who would be the replacement or the big addition that they could make.
Well, I don't want to say big addition, but I would say the Mitchell Robinson piece is he becomes an expiry, right, next year. And so the value there becomes higher, especially if he's coming off a run where he helped you in the postseason. So that's where, you know, you might be able to get something back. Miles McBride on a fantastic contract, that's where you might be able to get something back. I mean, if you're talking about moving one of the bigger names, we're talking about pie in the sky stuff, right? But, you know, I think I would think process of elimination, it would be OG. But I'm not going there. I'm just saying they have the capital to still make moves, you know, significant move to get somebody off the bench. Like that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
When you're talking about Mitch and Miles McBride and Precious and those type of players.
That's interesting. All right, last thing for me, and I have not heard anybody really get into this. I'm very curious how you answer this. I think our audience will love it as well. So we obviously do a lot of Jet stuff. Woody Johnson, Woody's a mess, right? Well, for a long time, you know, the Knicks were the Jets. And James Dolan took all the heat, and now things are better. Nobody mentions James Dolan's names. Is James Dolan doing anything different the last couple of years with the Knicks behind the scenes?
Just the one thing that I've heard, like, since Phil Jackson, right? He publicly said he was going to take a back seat, and he did. He, by and large, let Phil do what he wanted to do. And I think that's been the MO since then. Now, look. He cares, right? He's still, I think what his deal is he wants to know process and he wants to see that process produce results. And obviously the Knicks have done that under Leon Rose. So he has no reason to kind of fly off the handle about what's going on the basketball court, but he still cares and he still wants to see results. Maybe he's less involved in the day-to-day, certainly less involved in the basketball decisions. I think that's changed, but the care factor, the pressure that's on the Knicks and Rangers to win, that hasn't dissipated.
How about last one from me, Ian? BT mentioned it before about Luka. You talked to a lot of people, you know, interleague circles and all that stuff. Is there a different side to this Luka Doncic trade that maybe we aren't understanding? Did the Mavs, in fact, reach out to other teams? Did they just identify Anthony Davis? Can you add any more insight as to what you've heard about the trade that seemed to, you know, shock the basketball world?
I think it's a combination of them owing him that he was going to be up for that monster extension. And, you know, they obviously didn't want to commit to that. So they got ahead of
him. Why? He's one of the top five players in the NBA.
You know, their thing is, I don't know how much this has been reported. I don't know. They've talked about the conditioning. Part of it was, though, like, as you continue to put miles on those tires and with the shape that he's in, I think there was a concern about how he would age. Not saying he's going to be, he would be 31, I think, at the end of that extension, but just the concern about his body, the miles, the way he takes care of his body, how it would look towards the end. I think that was part of the concern. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I'm saying those are kind of the whispers coming out of Dallas. And I think that they also wondered if he wanted to be there long term, rightly or wrongly. I think there was some question about that. Look, I would call the league if I was trying to trade Luka Doncic. I would not have limited it to one team. It kind of reminds me of the Porzingis deal a few years ago. But clearly, Dallas had their eyes on Anthony Davis. Right or wrong, we're going to find out, right? I don't think it was right. Nobody thinks it was right, but let's see how it plays out.
Thanks for your time, Ian. We appreciate the insight.
Thank you, fellas. You guys have a good day.
How about that for a throwback Thursday? Steve, are you there?
I'm right here waiting to go.
Good to hear your voice again, man. How are you?
Well, I'm doing okay. I think I know why you're having me on tonight, and I'm pretty sure it's to mention and to analyze Steve Cohen being elected to the Major League Baseball Executive Council. Isn't that why you're having me on tonight?
No, not at all, but go on.
No, I just happened to see that. He and John Fisher, who could be the worst owner in any sport you can think of. He owns the Oakland Anabolics, who will be playing in Sacramento. And the bottom line is he lied and cheated his way out of Oakland to go and get taxpayers in Las Vegas to build him a stadium they don't want to build.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that the Anabolics are going to stay in Sacramento. And, of course, the news with the New York Metropolitans is something that was not a shock and certainly not a surprise. He wasn't going to get Freeman's money. He wasn't going to get Christian Walker's money. Santana had signed with Cleveland and Goldschmidt with the Yankees, Solano with Seattle and Bell with Washington. Where was the polar bear going to end up? You knew, I knew, everybody knew he was going to end up with the Metropolitans, but not with the money that he and Scott Boras wanted to get.
Yeah, all the talk about him going to Canada, he might have had a better shot of playing with the Montreal Expos than the Toronto Blue Jays. I think everybody in baseball knew he was coming back. He wanted to come back. And they have the richest owner in the sport to pay him to come back. And that's what you have the guy for, right? Like, he made the deal. He made it happen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Mets wanted him. I mean, they made that clear. He didn't have a good year. He's not the most athletic. He's not the best defensive first baseman, being right-handed. And, you know, he's not, you know, with a lot of speed. But nobody in their lifetime who is a Mets fan is ever going to forget the home run he had against the Brewers in the postseason. He had an off season, an off year during the regular season. So now he gets a chance to do it all over again. He doesn't have to worry about arbitration and none of that. And Boras, you know, is going to have the polar bear, you know, gamble on this upcoming season where he can opt out after year number one of this two-year $54 million deal and to become, you know, available again. So he is really, in a way, Alonso, betting on himself to have a much better year. And the Mets, I mean, they want to be able to score runs, that's for sure, with Soto and Lindor and Alonso and Vientos and Alvarez. They have power. I don't know why the Mets let Harrison Bader get away for Jose Siri, who they got from Tampa Bay. I was looking up some of Siri's numbers. I guess he better be a good glove, a good defensive player, and a late-inning defensive replacement. But he, in 450 at-bats, he struck out 170 times and only drew 31 walks in something a little less than 450 plate appearances. So I don't know. I mean, Bader wasn't great, but he was serviceable. He was efficient enough, you know, as a second-tier player. But getting Siri, I guess, Siri better have some speed as a late-inning pinch runner and maybe a late-inning defensive replacement. I'm not all that familiar with him since Tampa Bay is not on my radar.
I am. I think he's an attitude guy, and I say that because he's going to bring some attitude. This is a guy that can play every position in the outfield. He's got a little bit of a flair for the dramatic. The main thing that stands out last year was him pimping a home run and taking his time to walk around the bases. And, course, Juan Soto returned the favor and hit a home run and took his time. And, you know, those guys had a little bit of a stare-off last season, Yankees versus Rays.
Right. And the Mets, I was going to bring up with the bullpen, you know, they have Stanek and Warren from the Giants and getting A.J. Minter, the left-hander. I guess Stanek and Warren and Minter will lead into Diaz. But the bullpen, as you know, Keith, you know, 6-1, half dozen of the other, 1 year in, 1 year out. Matone, Brazelwan, you know, new guys. We'll see how they perform. But the bottom line is the starting rotation, of course, Holmes is going to get the chance to start, and Senga will be back, and Manaea they had to re-sign, and Montas they got, and David Peterson, the lefty. So the starting rotation, you hope, can stay healthy. If you're a Met fan, you're hoping. You're not hoping as the Yankees did. You know, losing Soto is one thing, and that's somewhat shocking. But the Yankees picked up a lot of good players you know, to make up for that. Although, how do you really make up for a Soto? But nonetheless, the Yankees, they'll be competitive as always, as usual. And so will the Metropolitans. But the middle part of their lineup, you know, should be producing lots of power, lots of runs, you know, with, as I say, Lindor and Soto and Alonso and Vientos and Alvarez, you know, he could be a better defensive catcher, but the bottom line is he's got the power. And last half of the lineup, he ought to be able to produce some runs. So the Mets will be very entertaining, as will your Yankees.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about who's had the better offseason. I don't really think it matters. I also don't think that you can replace Juan Soto. There are fans that call me up to say, oh, they're better off without Juan Soto. I think that's incorrect. I watch the guy every day. I can't turn the page. We'll see what happens this season, but I can't turn the page and say, oh, yeah, you know, silver lining here. We're better off without Juan Soto. And then also, Steve, like, comparing off seasons doesn't matter because the National League is stacked, the American League not so much.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right about that. And look at the division that the Metropolitans are in. I mean, with Atlanta and Philadelphia, Miami has always given them some issues, Washington. But, when you have Atlanta and Philadelphia in your division, you know it is going to be, you know, a very interesting regular season. But the Mets will be heard from. And if they can stay healthy and reach the backside of their baseball card and you know, fulfill at most expectations of success, they ought to make the playoffs again. And what a season it was, even though they didn't go as far as they wanted to go. But as you know, so many miracles, including the Alonso three-run home run against Milwaukee, but so many miracles the last couple of months of the season. I don't expect those same kinds of miracles to happen, but I do expect the Mets to win, you know, certainly well over 90 games. Now, again, you have to consider health. And you have to consider, you know, how good some of the guys you have expectations for, you know, how well they're going to perform. So there's a lot of variables and a lot of question marks as we go into the season. But on paper, and I know you're going to tell me you don't win games on paper, but on paper, the Mets should be scoring a lot of runs. And if the pitching can hold up its end of the bargain, both starting and with the bullpen, the Mets will be there.
Yeah, they're much better going into spring training and will be much better than they were opening day last year, opening day this year. The difference is, you know, they'll have a target on their back. They'll be expected to win. And I think when you add guys like Juan Soto, he's a high tide raises all ships type of guy. Like, he's going to, you know, bring everybody's level up with him. I think Lindor has arrived after the MVP caliber season he had last year. I think he's got to get out of the gate quickly and start fast because there's going to be expectations right away. Here's another thing for you. You know, I talk about the pieces of the puzzle from last year's OMG Mets, and Jose Iglesias is still out there. My friend Pat Ragazzo put a report out that the Mets offered him a one-year deal, and he's looking for more than that. But I don't know what his market is. Do you think that the Mets will end up bringing him back? Do you think that they need him back?
Well, I certainly would want him back. You know, my two cents worth. He was so valuable in the field, and he's versatile, and he got some big hits. I thought he was tremendous. I certainly hope he does wear a Mets uniform and play his home games in Queens once again. You know, he may sign with another team if somebody wants to get desperate and overpay for him. But it hasn't happened as you and I are speaking right now. And as you say, he's still out there. But I do think he is going to be back with the Metropolitans. At least I hope so.
Yeah, the last thing for you, you know, I talk about Steve Cohen being the richest owner in the room and now having David Stearns, the smartest guy in the room, and them as a tandem is what fans dream of, specifically Mets fans, going from the Wilpons and going from, you know, all these different GMs over the years. Like, now you have these two guys together that, like, they're not going to lose many negotiations. They're not going to make too many mistakes. And the biggest thing about Stearns last year, if somebody wasn't playing up to the standards, he got him out of there. Whether it was Joey Wendell or Adrian Hauser or Jorge Lopez had his incident, he got him out of there. You know, he kind of tweaked and changed the team. And then Mendoza, always got to shout him out as well, changed the lineup and was very good with the clubhouse. I just think, you know, if we add Mendoza in, the combination of Steve Cohen, David Stearns, and Carlos Mendoza, there are adults in the room, and they're the ones steering the ship. And I think this is potentially the end of the LOL Mets and the Metropolitans being a perennial contender. We got to see if they can get back-to-back postseason appearances here.
Well said, and no surprise about that. And no, you're right about all of what you're talking. By the way, do you get many calls about the Knickerbockers and how well they look, how well they play, and all the winning they are doing?
Sure. Because of what went on in their front office and the changes those guys made with this team to get them to this point. Now the Knicks are perennial contenders. They're being talked about as a top five contender to win a championship this year, and their window's open for the next 2 to 3 years at least.
Yes, and the three all-star teams, you have Brunson and KAT, you have Towns on one team, and you have Brunson on another team. The NBA all-star game is so screwy, and every year it's with the changes, it seems. Now they have like a tournament. An all-star game tournament with three teams. Brunson is on one of the teams and Towns on another. Being a Devils fan, I know they're in action tonight and as we speak. But do you get Ranger calls?
Yeah, and they vary. I got the Devils game on in here right now. The Rangers calls have varied over the last month. It's been an interesting start to 2025 for the Rangers. I feel like people are in, people are out. Obviously, they made some moves. The JT Miller trade. They had a big win against the Bruins last night. Yeah, we get some varying Rangers calls. They're kind of sparse.
You know, I was going to ask a trivia question regarding the New York Rangers. I mean, everyone knows about the gag line, the goal a game line. That's where the gag came from with Hatfield and Rattel and Jobert. And everyone knows about Messier and his line. With Graves and with Tony Amonte and Kovalev and Verbeek. But I was going to ask if there was a Ranger fan who knew of the Mafia line, who knew of the Godfather line. And by the way, we can't say about Panarin, the bread line, because that's been used. And the bread line was a part of the Rangers back in the late 1930s. And early 1940s, they had a bread and butter line they called the bread line. So we can't use that for Panarin. But the Mafia, they did have a Mafia line, if you could believe, a Godfather line. And I'm wondering if before midnight tonight, you might get a call from a Ranger fan who knows the three guys who made up the Godfather line.
I'm sure somebody out there listening right now is going to dial 888-808-1019. Steve, you're the man. Hope you're well. Hope you're excited about this Mets season. We'll have you on again when we get rolling and we have some actual games to talk about.
Well, thank you once again. It means a lot. Thank you very much for having me on. Always a pleasure and continued success, young man.